And when I started running, I suppose it didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the Hurling Show, the morning after league final. JJ, Paddy, Mikey are here, as usual. I want to introduce you lads to the top of the show, brought to you by Ger Lochnan. Because Ger Lochnan is getting his way.
He's
back.
He's another mention again, he is.
At the top of it, we're going to start the show with Ger Lochnan, because this is what he wants, and we're going to give him exactly what he wants. He's in the Star today, and he's saying, Tip have five or six players playing yesterday that aren't top class intercounty hurlers, so how can you talk of Tip being great? This isn't even a good Tipperary team, let alone a great one. Now, straight away, as a straw man argument, because I haven't heard anybody saying Tipperary are a great team. They have a great team. They're not, like, he's trying to compare them to Kilkenny, the teams you were on, JJ, yeah. And I don't hear anybody doing that. They're just saying that they're the team to beat this year, and that's it. So he's really putting the boot in them now that they've lost the league final. I'd say, Paddy, JJ, you'll know all about going out in the field. You've done it in a Leinster final against Galway, where it's almost like you've been drugged. You just can't spark into life. It's just impossible. It happens to every team. And, like, I mean, Tipperary have got consistency in their game. That was a one-off. And I wouldn't be going around saying Tipperary aren't even a good team after that.
Yeah, no, it's very hard to see. I'd like to see him come back to the Monday after the Ireland final last year, what he wrote about Tipperary. He was kind of glowing recommendations about him then. Like, you know, in the space of 6 or 8 months, not to call him a good team, I think it's a bit harsh, to be honest with you. It's reactionary again, and that's what Ger done. He reacted to the game that was played, but they were flat on the day. Doesn't make him a bad team. Doesn't make him a great team winning one All-Ireland either, to be fair. But you judge him over 5 or 6 years, and that's where they will be judged, and then you can say that they're a good or a great team. But not to say they're a good team, it's a bit harsh after one poor, very, very poor performance, no doubt, but it was a poor performance, so he's only one game though.
Hey, what? I have to pull him up on his Kilkenny notions here. You can't be a great team if you win one All-Ireland. Yes, you can. Lots of great teams won one All-Ireland. No more, JJ.
You were talking about 96 and we're doing it.
That was a fabulous team. Yeah. Sometimes one All-Ireland is all you need.
It was actually funny, Joe Canning's coming up on the show in a while, and I saw him talking about people, the pressure on them to win an All-Ireland, and it's like Galway have only ever won four.
Yeah,
four All-Irelands in their history, and there's the pressure, you know what I mean, on them. But obviously we're not going to get into the stupid debate of whether Tipperary are a good team or a great team and give Ger Lochnan his due. But, like, I mean, you know, Paddy, my opinion on Ger Lochnan is that this kind of stuff, he's letting himself down. He's a legend of the game. I think he's a very credible pundit when he's actually just being, you know, analytical and giving some opinions. This kind of thing doesn't help his reputation at all.
No, but he doesn't care. That's very, very simple. He didn't care as a manager. He was as disrespectful as he wanted to be. And as a pundit, he doesn't care either. Whoever the flavour of the month is going to get. And he just sees it's like a bell goes off for a flashing light. Okay, I have something trito here. I think it's very disrespectful at times. And he's even done it with his own players that he's had in his time who've been managers, and just doesn't seem to really care. As long as he gets into headlines and there's something about him, he seems to be very, very happy with it.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, I see Eamon Dunphy doing it. Eamon Dunphy's almost just a joke figure now. I don't think there's anybody that takes him seriously. But still and all, last night after Messi scoring 2 goals against Real Madrid, I rang my father, because we're both big Barcelona fans, and the first thing he said to me was, "Jeez, Dunphy, eat his words now," because Dunphy had said that.
He was all over Twitter last night.
And I went,
"Yeah.
Do you think I give a shit what Dunphy says?" So I started having an argument with him about, "Why is that the first thing you're going to say to me?" And they seem to get inside people's heads with these huge, massive, stupid opinions. And obviously, this seems to work. Like, whether I don't think.
Yeah, but if you look at it, Willie, like, a lot of people that would listen to them mightn't be, you know, bred really hard, bred into it. Now, maybe your father's maybe massive into the soccer. I don't know, but I know a lot of the GA people. Let's turn it over and see what Lochnan says. Don't turn it to another channel and see what Lochnan says. Like, some people, if you're not big into something, it might be like me watching tennis or something. I could listen to somebody. They might be way off the mark, but if they seem like they know what they're on about, or they're passionate about what they're going on about, I might go, yeah, sure, that's fair enough. So many people were at the game yesterday, watched it on telly, that mightn't have watched any league games. anything like that. So now whatever Gerlach Nairn says is gospel, because you know, he's in a paper. Wow, he gets his words printed.
Yeah, it seems to be entertainment rather than analysis.
There's a lot, there is so much now to be heard above the noise, you know. There's so much commentary and analysis, or you know, opinion dressed up as analysis out there, that to be heard you do have to sometimes say the outrageous. But if you're saying the outrageous every week, when does it stop being outrageous?
It's not outrageous anymore. Yeah,
it's
there's
just common
no
out, isn't it?
It's just, yeah, it's just common. And this is the thing, I was, the point I was going to make about Dunphy, because Dunphy's an old man and he's hanging on to his media career, and I can kind of see why he's trying to do this, and it's all shock value stuff because he might think this will keep me in a job. I think Gerlach Nairn has enough you know, in the game, he's still credible enough that he doesn't need to go down that road. Like, I mean, I don't think his media duties are under threat. Like, he's good. I think he's good value on the TV show.
Yeah.
I don't think he's as shocking as that. Probably because people would be able to pull him up on this kind of nonsense. But he gets away with it because he's writing it in a newspaper. But just if I'm in my 60s and I turn in, if I start carrying on like that, let's just pull me aside and say, "Wooly, just give it up." Imagine still being in that game in your 60s, peddling out nonsense every week.
Sure, that's another reason why Dunphy is still in the game. He says stuff like that and he gets reaction to it and it keeps himself relevant, and that's what keeps him on the cameras, and that's why he says these things he does say. He gets away with it because he can argue his corner. If someone comes at him on the RTE, he argues his corner. And Gerlach Nairn, in fairness, doesn't say it on the analysis of the game, but he has it on the paper the next day where he can actually sit down and think about what he's going to write. And then he's obviously poking for a reaction, and he's getting it.
So the more thought he puts into it, the worse he gets, maybe. I think that's a reflection of him. Now, it's Micheál Donoghue, who I want to give him a quick shout out, and I want to give the Galway panel a quick shout out. And this isn't gloating after a league final. I know it's only a league, but, like, I mean, we'll talk to Joe Canning in a while. It's only Joe's second ever senior national title, and he's on the go a long time. So, like, it is a big deal for Galway to have won that league against a, you know, a really good, not a great team like Tipperary. But they ousted Cunningham, and they got a lot of criticism for it at the time. But since they've appointed him, they've had a real steal about them. They should have beaten Tip last year in the semi-final. They've won a national league. And I always find, like, with the Mayo footballers, when teams lose one, all these pundits come out of the woodwork and criticise them, saying, "Oh, well, they're upstarts for getting rid of their manager." This panel of players got rid of a manager they weren't happy with, got in one that they are happy with, and are a vastly improved team, I think. They're an improved team, and, like, I know Cunningham got to them to All-Ireland finals, but I think there's a more of consistency of performance from Galway now. You're not as worried about what they're going to get. They're a big, solid, physical team, and I think sometimes a panel of players should get a little bit of credit for being man enough to, you know, get rid of one they didn't want and change things. Because, like, most players know now that the window of intercounty is short, and you don't want to waste a couple more years, you know. Cunningham had his, must have been 5 years he had in the job.
Yeah, look, again, it's the easiest thing to do now is to say nothing and go through the year and just go through the motions. But the hardest thing you do is get rid of a manager. Look, I've never in that situation myself, and I was happy enough with the manager we had now, and we didn't have to do anything. But just to, from the outside looking in, very, very hard thing to do to get rid of something like that, and you're getting a serious amount of pressure being put on yourself, because people are just waiting and waiting for you to fail. When you fail, they'll throw that back in your face straight away as well, like, you know.
Yeah, but they don't eat humble pie when it actually turns out that this actually was a good thing, you know.
No, it doesn't.
So I'm going to gloat on the other side of things here now. It's exactly what I'm doing. Right, boys, we'll move on from my gloating there, because David Fitzgerald has accepted. This is just a bit of news. Don't worry, we are going to get into that. To analyse the game in a little while. Just a bit of news that broke this morning is Davy Fitz has accepted his 8-week ban handed down to him by the CCCC, and he's not going to make an appeal. So I read that headline and I was like, Jesus, fair play to you, Davy. That's exactly, you know, the right thing to do, and you deserve an awful lot of credit for taking your medicine. And then I read the bloody Wexford statement that was released on the back of it, and it was like a glowing tribute to Davy. It was like, what a brilliant manager he is. And the best part of it was, and it says, indeed, it is not unknown for other similar penalties to have been nullified after appeals and legal processes. So, like, I mean, it's no secret that Davy could have appealed this and brought it court and caused a big mess. You don't need it spelt out to you in a statement. You know what I mean? It smacked to me of a PR job and pure Davy Fitz. And instead of just going, I'm not appealing it, I'm taking my medicine, it was the wrong thing to do, and being roundly, you know, applauded for it, he has to try and put a spin on it. I'm doing this, and look, it's very obvious why I'm doing it. And, like, Jesus, Davy, like, just
Where are we? We're the Monday week after it, so we could take from that statement that it's taken Davey 8 days to calm down.
Yeah.
He's finally accepted it. It's okay. And you can put out the statement is a little bit self-serving, all right.
Oh,
but it's sure.
Totally self-serving. I can actually picture a dark room with the Wexford secretary with a pen writing it out and Davey standing over. No, change that word. No. Yeah. And then after about 3 hours, they finally come to one that Davey's happy. Put that out there. But listen, lads, we'll leave that there because we have Joe Canning on the line now. We're going to take a look back at yesterday's game. Joe, how's the head?
Yeah, not too bad. I was home early enough, tucked into bed last night, so grand today, yeah.
Joe, don't come on the GAR telling lies now. You're home. What is the plan in Galway after a big win like that? Do you all go into town or do you have somewhere that you usually go, in a club or anything?
Well, to be honest, we have club championship next again, so it's hard to know what to really to do. We have to prepare for that for the next 2 weekends. So, no, I'd say the boys might go for one or two just to clear the heads, I suppose, today, but nothing major, you know.
Yeah, not even today, but last night. Like, would you all stick together as a group and go into Galway City Centre, or is there a spot you usually go to?
Yeah, in fairness to the boys in Busker Browns there, they put on a free bar for us last night, so we all ended in there and we got back. So, in fairness to the boys, they looked after us last night.
Right, okay. And come here, since you won yesterday, I've heard interviews from David Burke, from yourself, from Micheál Donoghue, and you're all playing this down. It's all about the championship. Sure, this is just another game. It was a great win.
Yeah, it was a good win, but it wasn't something, I suppose, that we started out at the start of the year to win, to be honest. Our main aim was to get back up to Division 1A and that didn't happen, so we had to kind of reset our targets a little bit after the Wexford game, and we just took it kind of as it came, really. And the 28th of May is always the one that we were looking forward to since we got back together last November or that, so it still didn't change anything, so that's our main aim, and it was only just another game on the way and another good test to get to see where we were this time of the year, I suppose, before 28th of May.
Yeah, well, I think it's fair to say that you're in a pretty good place, but I still don't think you should play down. I know the championship's the most important thing, but still a national title, Joe, and even everything you've won in your career, there's only been two national senior titles and this is the second one, so it's still a big deal to win a national league.
Oh yeah, for sure it is, but nobody will really remember too much about it if we don't perform against Dublin in a few weeks' time, and that's the kind of cutthroat nature that we live in, really. So it is great, to be fair, to win a National League medal, and we're happy enough with the results, all right, but we know that not long down the line we've another big test, you know.
Yeah, do you think the win was important mentally for the team, you know, in their development? Because, like Cyril Farrell said last night, you're on the go, this team, maybe 6 years together. And, you know, to get over that line and get that national title, a lot of players on that team wouldn't have one.
Yeah, I don't know where Cyril got this team being 6 years together. A lot of the guys are still only 22, 23 years of age, you know. We had two lads that came on there yesterday, 19, 20 years of age, Tom Monaghan and Sean Loftus as well. So we're a fairly young team and we're not that long together. But it is good, especially when there is pressure on us, because over the past number of years, Galway teams having won in finals or semi-finals and stuff like that, so it is always good to kind of get that monkey off the back and get that belief that we can win a final, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. Our Flynn, I suppose, and Whelan came on the scene 2 years ago, so maybe it's 3 years, you know, since that injection of those two young lads.
Yeah.
I don't know where Cyril was getting that, but it's always kind of what's said about Galway, it depends what Galway will show up, you know. And yesterday's performance, you know, it was so good. Are you starting to believe now that you're at a place where you can consistently put in good performances, or, you know, performances that you can be proud of?
Well, we're trying to get to consistency is the big thing for us, you know, because down through the years, I suppose, we've always had one big performance and then the next day kind of a little bit flatter, and so that consistency is the big thing for us. We do believe in ourselves and our own ability, obviously, but it is just to get that consistency and back up a good game with another good game, you know.
Yeah. What were you thinking when you were being hammered by Waterford at home and it was Waterford's B team? Were you thinking this is just another one of these poor performances, a bit nearly like Tipperary had yesterday?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to know what way to think when you're in the middle of it. It was just trying to, at a stage in the match, you were probably just trying to think, Jesus, we're 10 points down, let's not make it any worse, you know, and we started chipping away, and we got good belief, I suppose, from that, you know. Like, they brought on all their big names after that, and, you know, they finished with probably their starting 13, I suppose, or thereabouts from last year on the field. So it was good to get that win and, I suppose, turn it around and get that belief that, you know, with 20 minutes to go, there was always a chance that you could turn things around from even 10 points down or anything like that, you know.
So what about these sidelines yesterday? Are they something you're working on as well? It's like these quick sidelines. Maybe it's almost like a Cluxton kick out where somebody makes a run, you pick them out and then they flick it back to you and you're left there kind of in the pocket. It looked to me like it was, because you did it two or three times in a row underneath the stand, it looked like something that was definitely worked on.
To be straight up, but it wasn't.
No.
It's funny now, it's hard to take sidelines on some pitches because on the line there's no good grass on the sidelines and you have to place it right beside the line. And one or two didn't go well for me at the start, so you have to just try and, I suppose, take your initiative and try something different. And like, sometimes they work and sometimes they don't, you know. But one or two of them seemed to work yesterday. So it was always good that way, you know.
There was talk about the size of the Galway team, and that wasn't always the case. It was always real skillful hurlers. But you look at the spine of your team and you look right throughout the team, there's some serious size. And then you have Johnny Glynn, who's a monster of a man, coming on as well. Like, you're a big team now. You know, it's not a case that Galway would be pushed around by any team.
No. Most lads are nearly over 6 foot, I suppose, and even 6'2", 6'3". But I think the lads are able to move as well. There's no point in having a big, strong team and not being able to get around the field. I think that's the most important thing. And your skills is, like, the speed of your hurling is still going to be the difference between having a bad first touch and then your second touch going to be a tackle at that level anyway. So your hurling has to be number one no matter what. But if you're able to move around, that's always a plus as well, you know.
What's the story with Johnny Glynn anyways? He's like, there was talk he was commuting from New York, which sounded absolutely crazy stuff. He's home for, he just has to go back a few times now, I think, is the story, is it?
Yeah, I think he can work a little bit from here. But I'm not 100% sure. He's in and out the last few weeks now, and you know, he'll be back for a couple of weeks coming up to the Dublin game as well. But we're just delighted, I suppose, to have him back because he has something different. You can saw yesterday the first ball went down top and he just caught it and created a score for Conor Whelan, and he's a monster of a man, really, and it just adds something different.
He's gotten even bigger. He's gotten even bigger, if that's possible, in the last year.
If that was possible, yeah. Eating well over in New York. Right?
He definitely looks like he was. He needs a few more weeks training by the look of him, but I'm sure he'll get back fit. Come here, talk to me about this Division 1B, because we talked about this a lot on the podcast, and you said, like, by your definition of what your aims were, your league was a disappointment, even though you ended up winning it because you didn't get promoted. But is getting promoted the be-all and end-all? We see division or teams from Division 1B winning it now because you don't have that intense fixture schedule that the teams in 1A do, and you can time yourself that little bit better.
Maybe so, but like, we weren't really timing ourselves for a league final, to be straight up about it. We're timing ourselves for May 28th. So when we were setting out, it wasn't about timing ourselves to win the league. It was about getting back up to Division 1A, because that's where the no disrespect to 1B, but that's where the best teams are when you're playing the likes of Tipperary and the Kenny's and these teams.
But is that
overplayed?
Is that overplayed though? Because you will get to test yourself against them in quarter, semi, and final if you're good enough to get, you know what I mean, to get to that stage.
Yeah, but I, like early days, you want to see if you're physically and mentally able to test yourself against them. And when you have new lads coming into panels, you're always wondering at senior inter-county level, will they be able for it? You know what I mean? So that early league, I suppose, always helps to see how lads are going, you know?
Yeah. Was it a weird league in a way for you, Joe? Because like after the Wexford loss, you were pretty much out of the reckoning because there's no way Wexford were going to lose one of their last, whatever it was, three games. So like you had early disappointment to know that one of your early targets was gone. Did that maybe take the pressure off you in a little way and you could just hurl or, you know, go out and play rather than...
It didn't really, to be honest. It put even more pressure on us because like we got a good bit of abuse down in Galway for losing that game against Wexford and the local media and stuff like that, and even national media. So there was a lot more pressure on us, I suppose, not to, I wouldn't say slip up again, but to not lose another game, you know, in the league. And there was that extra pressure on us then to try and perform every day and just get momentum and consistency going towards championship. So there was a bit more pressure on us than Anton, I suppose, you know.
Right, okay, well, it might have eased up. Maybe you work better when you have that pressure, Joe. This is why you're playing this down, so that you maybe need that little bit of abuse back home to get the good performances out of you.
maybe, but you don't. It's not a good way to be either, to be losing a match just to get a kick up the arse, I suppose, and get a performance the next day. So you'd rather the other way around, I think, you know.
Where's your hamstring at the moment? Like how's the injury? It looks to have been smooth sailing since you made your comeback during the league.
Yeah, it's fine. It is grand, to be honest. Probably sick of people asking me about this hamstring now at this stage.
Yeah.
It's grand. I'm not feeling anything with it. I still obviously have a bit of numbness in it from the nerves and stuff from the operation, but other than that, it's A1, you know.
That was a bit of a freak injury, Joe. I'm just trying to remember it in my head. That wasn't from you just running. That was actually like you were almost in a hamstring stretch position, were you, when there was weight put on you, down on you, so you were stretched into an unnatural position. Is that memory correct?
Yeah, like I was running for the ball and I just went to stretch a bit more to get the ball.
Yeah.
It was a bit away from me and then I got a push in the back. And
that was it.
Just kind of, yeah, so that's what really, it was the push that really kind of just set it. And it just got caught in the ground as well, I suppose. And it just gave way or whatever, but... Yeah, no, it's grand now and it's fine. Just get on with it.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's all right for the foreseeable future anyway. You know?
It's forgotten about, yeah, because it was such a freak occurrence, the chances of that happening again. But did you know you were in big trouble when it happened?
At the time, not really. Or like when you're in the semi-final like that, you're probably thinking, geez, just... What you have to do to get me back on the field, you know, that kind of way. But when I'm in at half time, the test, there was no power whatsoever in it. So I knew something was up, and Dave Hanley, in fairness, kind of said, yeah, it looks bad. But it wasn't until, I suppose, I got the scan and stuff that I knew exactly what was up. And then Aina Falvey and James Harty did good work on it, I suppose, and they stitched it back together and got me back in the field again, you know.
Right, okay. Come here, how's the business going now, the restaurant and stuff like that? You don't have the same commute as you did when you were working in Dublin.
Yeah, it's grand. It's in Limerick, Camille. So it's going well. It's going well. We're enjoying it down there. And just trying to move on now. And there's other ideas in the pipeline, I suppose, for this summer and next summer, and trying to open up a few more places around the west. So yeah, enjoying it, and it's something different. Get a good buzz off it, so it's going well so far. There was a good crowd in there yesterday after the game. Most of my family anyway kind of came over after the game. So
too many freebies. Too many freebies being handed out yesterday to make money, I suppose, when they're all there.
Too much free ice cream after dinner. But no, it's good. It was handy the last few weeks now. We're playing in Limerick, so you could tip over after the games, all right. So it was grand that way, you know.
Right, okay. And are you down there, you know, very regularly in the restaurant and stuff? I suppose at the start you need to be seen there.
Yeah, I'm down there a couple of days, more the weekends, kind of Friday, Saturday, Sunday, whenever we don't have really a match on Sunday as well and stuff like that. So during the week then we've obviously the Hurley business at home, so I do be there for a couple of days as well. So mixing in between Portumna and Limerick is seems to be working for me at the moment anyway. No.
Yeah, and I don't think it can be overestimated, Joe, what a commute like from Galway to Dublin can take out of you. Like, I mean, 9 to 5 is already difficult enough playing intercounty without throwing 2 hours, 2.5 hours home and all that back to Dublin after training. Like, it was unsustainable what you were doing.
Yeah, to be honest, because you were coming up 3 and 4 times a week, you know. It was just the recovery part of it, more so than anything. Like, you were fine doing it, but in the long run, like, you weren't able to kind of get to the sea or something after training, small things like that, or even wait on for physio or something just to get the body right after training.
Yeah,
because you're sitting in the car obviously for 2 hours again, and then your hamstrings and your hips and stuff were tightening up because you were sitting in the car straight after training. Whereas I live in Oranmore now, and it's grand after training. You're only 10 minutes away from the pitch, and you can get to the sea here, and you know, you can recover a lot easier, you know.
Yeah, how important all that stuff is. And, like, I mean, that recovery is so important. I think I was reading a stat that 11 of the Waterford panel are either student teachers or they are teachers, so they have the summers off. And, like, I mean, it's almost getting to this stage where players are choosing careers that will, you know, benefit their hurling and give them time to be able to put in the hours that's needed to be an intercounty hurler now.
Yeah, I suppose in a way I saw that right myself a few weeks ago there. I think you were covering it or something, and it seems that way, all right. But it is, it's just, we train, I suppose, so hard now, and as everybody kind of says, it's almost professional, but I suppose it's a big difference is professionals get the time to recover after trainings and stuff, and we don't really, because we have to go working or whatever, or go to college or stuff like that. So it is probably easier if you have the summers off that you can curtail everything towards playing intercounty, you know.
Yeah. So what's the plan now that the league's over? Is May the 18th? Is that the Dublin one? So what did you say? It's club matches for the next 2 weeks.
We've clubbed the next 2 weekends supposedly, and then we've 3 weeks until Dublin after that. So. 5 weeks time with Dublin, I think it's until the Moria.
Yeah, that's a weird one with the momentum you've built up, you know, that kind of going back to your clubs for 2 weeks, like, look, that's the way it is in a lot of counties, that maybe you're losing that little bit of landing back in, you know, the Tuesday night training after a big win, there's a great buzz there and stuff, you're kind of losing that when you're going back to the clubs.
Yeah, well, it's tough because, like, one or two of our guys have, like, played the whole, since the start of the season, I think it's 14 out of 16 weeks they've played a competitive match through Walsh Cup, League and club games. And I think that was my sixth or seventh game now in 7 or 8 weeks yesterday. So there's a lot even mentally, never mind physically, to kind of get ready for the Dublin game. And then you add in 2 more games in the next 2 weeks. It's tough going on the mind and body, so it's hard enough to try and stay fresh and keep that momentum going towards the summer, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Well, listen, best of luck with keeping it going anyways, and we'll talk to you hopefully in September after a big win.
Cheers, Willie. Thanks, Willie.
Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I'll tell you, give us a year, and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I'll tell you, give us a year, and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
Yeah, Les, the one thing about Galway, and it's noticeable, and most people are saying it now, is the size of them. Like, they look like a big, powerful unit. And like Joe was laughing there about Cyril Farrell saying they're on the go 6 or 7 years. Like, sure, Flynn and Whelan and these lads are only 20 or 21. Yeah, yeah. So, like, they're not. But, like, I'd say this is a new team, as in a two or three years on the road together. But they really do look like they're, you know, in a good place.
Yeah, a very, very big team. If you look at their spiner team down there, it's Dahi Burke, McInerney, Joe Canning, and it was Niall Burke was a full forward, started full forward, wasn't down to start, but he started full forward. Everyone them were over 6 foot, 6 foot two, 6 foot three. Big, big men, but able to hurl as well. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
And full back and centre back, as you know, for Galway for over the last probably seven or ten years, has been their problem. They could always had a full back, but never had a centre back. Always had a centre back, but never had a full back. But these two seem to be holding down the positions. And Dottie Burke, full back, he's the best full back out there at the moment as well. And he showed yesterday what he could do. He's very, very strong in the air, and he likes attacking the ball as well. Very, very strong too, you know. So they have the foundation of, again, well, any team, you have to settle down your spine or team. And have the foundation of a fabulous team there as well.
Yeah, McInerney, geez, he's a real find. Like, I mean, that spine, and that spine, how important, Paddy, spines are in a team. And, like, size is important. And, like, I have to keep talking about the perception of Galway. There's no perception of Galway being a little bit flaky or anything anymore, is there?
No, I wouldn't think so. Definitely the last couple of years we've played them, you know exactly what you're going to get. Especially, I think, when they get to the business end of the year, I think there's a real drive in them. As you said, when you know you have them strong lads and they're all quite reliable, those big lads, you know what you're going to get out of them. And that's what you saw again yesterday, the pure drive out. And when you have it's no good being big if you're not able to use it. These are big men, they're lean and they're strong. I've often played against lads, and the bigger the better, because they'd have a massive percentage of body fat and they couldn't really use it.
Yeah.
But these lads are lean, they're strong, they're athletic, and they've the long strides. So, you know, I suppose a little bit like Kilkenny, maybe for a few years you played against them, and every one of them are tall and able to battle for ball the air, but they're able to move too. So I think every day you play against them, it's going to be a very, very physical battle, and obviously yesterday it's very worked up for that.
Jason Flynn, just on that note, his two goals, they were both, neither run was just he got the ball on the run and he had clean space in front of him. He had to turn and pretty much out-muscle his man both times, and he did that and still had a yard of pace on him to get past him and to finish. And they're all just, every one of their forwards just look like inverted triangles. They're just the perfect shape. You look at Lee Chin there and you see that's the prototype kind of hurling athlete. Most of the Galway forwards look like that. They're all, like, powerful, but yet they get wider as they get up around the shoulders. No big fat arses, as we used to say.
Johnny Glynn had a bit of one. He definitely is a little bit. He needs another couple of months training there.
Bigger shorts or something like that.
Jeez, he looks like a man mountain. He was skinny.
Man.
Yeah, he definitely needs to lose a little bit. But Conor Whelan, lads, Jesus, the work rate of him, and he has filled out. Now, he is a strong looking fella now. And actually, Paddy, his best one to go to you with this. You don't often see Barrett getting cleaned out like that consistently over the 70 minutes.
No, you don't know. And I think it was only 2 or 3 weeks ago you were slating Conor Whelan, was it?
I didn't. I actually. no, but this is the truth, because I knew he had that hassling and harrying part of his game, but I definitely didn't have 5 points from play put down to him. You know what I mean?
He's well able. Now, the only thing I'd say about Cahill, look, he won't be making excuses for himself and no one else will. Like, a couple of them scores where Cahill making mistakes. Like, people forget he was. He had an operation. He was out for 3 months, and last week was his first game, and then he's playing the league final this week. So, to be honest with you, Cahill has never let tip down over the years. And you'd see in the first half, he was getting the ball, he was getting to it, but, you know, when you're not used to being in that situation, it's different playing a club match. It's just not the same. And look, he knows he he'll know he was bet up fairly well by Conor Whelan next day. So the flip side is that maybe I wouldn't like to be Conor Whelan next time Martin Carr there.
He'll have some sore shins on him maybe or something like that. But this is the thing, lads, and we talk a lot about sweepers in the game, and certain teams might need sweepers, and then you look at Wexford playing against Tip, and Tip used the ball so well that the sweeper can be maybe, you know, taken out of the game. Galway went with no sweeper. They left Tipperary with no extra man. They left. They didn't give Pádraig Maher a free roll. They put so much pressure on the Tipperary half-back line that the ball was being put down 50-50. Tigerish corner backs and breaking out. You know what I mean? Yeah, getting in on top of these breaks. And look, geez, that looks like the blueprint for all teams. Just
Fairness me, Hall. Don't know who he got his matchups 100% right. Cottle Mannion was supposed to start full forward, but he actually started out in Pádraig Maher.
Yeah, but didn't really pick that up on telly.
For every puck out, he was on the sideline, and Pádraig Maher had to be 5 yards away from it. But every puck was going down the far side, so it was keeping Pádraig Maher as further away from the ball as possible. So it's very disciplined out of Cottle Mannion to take himself out of the game. But the upside of that was no puckouts were coming down top of Pádraig Maher, and Pádraig Maher couldn't sweep in behind the half back line there as well. And what they did to use the ball very well as well is that Joe and even Cottle Mannion at times went deep, but they gave him the ball, give him 10 or 15 yard pop pass, and then they could actually turn and hit the ball back in. So you're bypassing the Tipperary half-back line, which is their strongest line there as well.
Yeah, because they scored, Joe got 9 and Mannion got 1-1. They got 1-10 off the Tip half-back line, which is like, you know. And geez, Paddy, that sounds like good tactics, because the one thing Mannion has, he has a big enough reputation that Paddy's not going to want to leave him. Yeah. And if he's willing to sacrifice his game, you know, he's still got 1-1, I suppose. Yeah. But at the same time, those little things are what makes a good manager. You'll have faith in a manager if he makes decisions like that and they come off.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, they're excellent players in their own right, and maybe some of Galway's problem before, and what's the problem in a lot of teams, is when a player's thinking about himself, I want to kind of score sheet and I want to play well. But even Joe Kenny yesterday, he got his few points, but it wasn't that he was trying to rely on that. In the last game against Limerick and yesterday, he was playing a lot of ball in front of his forwards, and he was trying to pop off a few passes. He was doing a really good team role, as was Mannion. Like, I saw that yesterday. Mannion was literally on the white line on the sideline. You can see exactly what they were doing. Right. That was brilliant. They've done it very well. But the thing is about this, they had tactics going into it, but Mike Tyson said everybody has a plan until they're punched in the face. And Tipperary never punched, you know, metaphorically Galway in the face. Like, they never hit him hard. They were never physically up to him. And realistically, tactics only can really come into play if you're the team on the front foot. Like, Galway were on the front foot all day. And the Tip backline, okay, they weren't good, but it was like a turkey shoot. You know, they were being run through, and there was balls being popped, and Galway lads could hit it where they want. So, great to have tactics, and they did it to the letter of the law. But if Tipperary were in their face yesterday, you'd find it a lot harder to keep Pádraig Maher out of the game. You know, the lads would have to clear it under pressure, and that's where he comes into his own. So, Tip have big things to work on, but Galway, like they did the last couple of times they played Tip, are, you know, they find it very difficult to break down.
Yeah, they definitely do. And we'll get on to talk about Tipperary and what kind of an effect this will have on them. But I mentioned to Joe there in the interview about the sideline balls. Do you notice in the second half there, he was just waiting for David Burke or for Cohen's run and just chipping it into there, and then they'd flick it back to him and over the bar. And Joe says that they weren't planned. I'm not sure I believe him, because they actually, if they weren't planned, I'd almost look when Joe was over the sideline ball like this was a Cluxton kick out. The movement was brilliant. Yeah. And then he got someone, and then back to him in the pocket. And it just made me wonder, in hurling, often sideline balls are just like pure lotteries. Like, there's never any thought put into them. They're like, okay, we have a sideline ball. Like, okay, let's just whack it. You know what I mean? Whereas when Joe has them and he's able to get them off the ground, it happened more than once for me to think, like, this is working. If this isn't a plan, it should be a plan.
But you can't underestimate how skillful that is. You wouldn't have too many Joe Cannons to stand over sideline ball that can actually
put it into a lad's run.
Right into his hand on the run there. So it's hard enough to do it, puck it out of your hand, let alone do it on a sideline as well. Like, but the two lads you spoke about there are probably Galway's two best hurlers, Joe and David Burke. And David Burke showed again that the last three games he played against, the two Ireland semi-finals and the game yesterday, no Tip lads can get near David Burke. He's absolutely phenomenal player. Whatever he is against Tipperary, if Tip meet him later on in Championship, they're going to have to curtail David Burke. Whatever they do, they're going to have to put someone on him to mark him. Whereas Brendan Maher is probably on him, but the two of them hurl a bit. Like, in midfield, you can do that, but David was on a phenomenal amount of ball, and he was in defence and he was in attack, and he was actually the spearhead for the Galway team there as well. But consistently over the last three games that they played Tipperary, David Burke was probably the player of them three games in regard to consistent ways too. So if Tipperary do meet him again, they're going to have to come up with some sort of plan now to curtail him.
It's not like they haven't had warning about his Mikey. He's been outstanding in their last two championship games.
He's been incredible. And you mentioned the sideline cuts. It was more than that. It was himself and Mannion and Flynn and Canning. They were just playing these little triangles. They weren't trying to play the ball in quick. They were looking for whoever's in space in the pocket. And there was a couple of moments where they're playing these like real bullet, like 10-yard passes to each other, just seeing who had the space. And it was just the interplay was incredible. And that's how Burke was getting free, because he was obviously they knew what they were at, and they were working these triangles, and the ball was getting to Burke. But just like the understanding that they clearly have. Micheál Donoghue was talking afterwards and he said, yeah, no, look, training has been going really well. And like, these lads are just humming now. They're absolutely clicking. They're on the same wavelength. And when, as you say, when you have a hurler as talented as David Burke on the same wavelength as a player like Joe Canning, that's serious trouble for any opposition, you know.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And like, I mean, I don't know, is it Brendan Marr in midfield doesn't like to mark, or you know the way midfielders have egos that they play their own game.
He's usually the defensive.
Yeah, but I think Brendan Marr needs to wake up to himself.
He was on Johnny Cohen yesterday.
Well, he was on Johnny Cohen. Brendan Marr was he? Cohen, so it was Jason Ford.
That's what I thought. I'd be watching him now, you know, clubmate. But
he's right.
I don't know. Maybe I could be wrong there.
Right, Brendan Marr. But Brendan wouldn't sacrifice. Like, I mean, midfielders in hurling in football as well tend not to mark each other. They all just all four have a free role, yeah, and like let's see who comes out on top. That's just the way it works, isn't it?
Yeah, but it even, I suppose, looking at Kilkenny again, Conor Ford is a midfielder that would actually keep detail to mark, say, David Burke whenever Kilkenny play Galway, because if you had Michael Fenley beside him, you let Michael Fenley do all the hurling, but Conor would actually do that job in, right, I'll go wherever David Burke goes, I'll go mark him, you know, that kind of way. So maybe if the next time they meet, I would tip my, you have to look at that, because I don't think Jason Ford was going to go back and mark him. Jason would like to get on the ball himself and express himself as much as possible as well, like, so he wasn't going to mark David Burke. Like, David Burke was going to hit the ball and Jason was going to hit the ball, but unfortunately David hit more ball than Jason, you know.
He did, yeah. What about Joe Canning, Paddy? Because like, we talked a lot last year on the podcast about Richie Hogan and what an awful nightmare he gives centre half backs, as in if they drift out into midfield, you'll be giving lads room to run down the middle, and if you let Richie Hogan off, you're in big trouble as well. And Joe Canning's offering that same problem to teams now. And Ronan Marr, what was he? Was he unsure whether to track him into midfield or whether to hold the centre half back? Because then you've David Burke bursting down the middle, so it's thrown a huge dynamic onto Galway's attacking play.
Yeah, well, look, it was very, very difficult, I think, for Ronan Marr yesterday. Like, the whole unit struggled, and if a centre forward is pulling away to the left or right or out the field, and if the Galway backs can find, if they're not under pressure coming out, like, it's so easy to find a man. And then, like, if you give, as we're saying, if you give Joe Canning a ball out around the middle, no one around him, he's going to find a perfect passer, he's probably going to score. So, I think it goes back to, and I'm sure Jade, if he was in a Kilkenny dressing room and being played around like that, it goes back to how in your face were you or the other team. Like, Joe Canning can give you massive problems, as Richie Hogan will, if they're around the middle with uncontested ball coming to, you know, they will. There's no way around that. But the minute you start putting pressure on these teams coming out, then you start, you know, getting balls that are contestable as a backman. But it's very, very hard. If Ronan Marr goes out of the middle there, there's a massive hole in the middle. There's a massive hole in front of James Barry. And then you could be looking at 5, 6, 7 balls being conceded.
Yeah.
So, like, Joe Canning is deadly. And the best person that they could put centre forward. But it won't work like that every day. But certainly it was a good start yesterday.
But, like, I mean, you think Ronan should hold the centre then and leave Joe off?
Yeah, I think so. I think the middle third of the field, like, gone are the days. If you told everyone, right, you're marking that man for the whole match, and we'll win that way. Unfortunately, hurling doesn't work like that. There's a lot of balls that you don't win, so you need a unit to work together. And the middle third of the field is the unit that all works together. And definitely in modern day hurling, you know, wing backs can't and centre backs can't say, well, I'm going up the field marking this man. What happens if you're out in midfield with Joe Canning, and then a Galway half back bursts out of the fence and he has 60 yards to hit the ball into? You're dead. As dead as a turkey shoot. So that's what makes a good centre back. When do I go and when do I stay? And I'd say most days Ronan gets it right. Maybe yesterday he didn't, but, like, you know, he was in the middle of all that, where wasn't being contested, and you know, you're on one of the best players in the country, so you know, he's probably on a heightened note yesterday, whatever he did.
Yeah, maybe it's a wing forward needs to drop and pick up Joe Henning.
I'd agree with Paddy as well. I wouldn't have Ronan Margolin out the field either. I'd have him centre back, hold that number six and let him sweep across if he can. And if he does go out the field, let the midfielder pick him up and let the wing forward go pick up with midfielder then as well. And that would be one way of walking around it. But again, I 100% agree with Paddy. If the like Adrian Toohey was coming out, he was breaking out in front with the ball, and he was coming out attacking the ball, and he was getting it, and he was clearing it there on contest. He could actually look up and pick out a man. He could pick the ball 40 yards up the line there, and he's picking out Cottle Mannion and Joe Canning, these guys. But if he was under pressure, then he'd have the head down and he'd be hitting it, and it'd be a 50-50 ball up. And sure, that's what the Tipperary halfback would want, a 50-50 ball in between, because they'd back each other all day now to win it, but it wasn't happening, you know.
So what do you put this down to then, lads? Because, like, I mean, whatever about the ball's not going over, you know, John McGrath, very uncharacteristic, even said it, the anxiety when you see him missing one or two easy frees. But work rate is something that any team can do. So, like, the Tipperary believe in the hype maybe after the last 10 minutes, and this is why they're not working hard. Like, Bubbles was taken off, wasn't probably working as hard as he could. The two McGraths aren't known as, you know, massive workers to begin with. They seem to pack their half forward line with workers. O'Brien was taken off. Yeah, you know, if Tipperary maybe lost sight of what they're about, or
it's hard to put your finger. Look, it's probably
now we're not writing Tipperary off by any means.
Yeah,
but like,
just on today's or yesterday's evidence, you're probably looking at it is a small bit of both of everything you're after saying there as well. And it's not just one thing; a few things went wrong. But fundamentally, I suppose they backed their half forward line in winning the ball. But I think Paddy Mannion had a brilliant game wing back. He came out with a mountain of ball, and then what you could see when the baller Mark came in centre forward, he was causing a bit of hardship. He was unlucky for a goal. He hit the crossbar as well, but he's the main ball winner over the last 2 or 3 years. With him coming back into the team, it's a new dynamic there as well. And obviously it's a shame he wasn't playing, and that released John McGrath out to the corner and take a small bit of pressure off him as well. But I suppose, look, last against Wexford, they had Bubbles come on, Michael Breen come on, and these guys started, but it didn't really take for them on the particular day, and they mightn't have had the subs to bring in, and at that stage the pressure holding up. But they were flat for the first, you could see the first 10-15 minutes were flat, and they were lucky enough. Galway missed probably around 17 wides as well. It could have been a lot worse. I know Tipperary missed a few scores as well, but Galway, if they were on radar, they could have hammered them all.
It was hard not to notice Stephen O'Brien getting withdrawn before half time after, you know, he made the decision last year, he stuck with the hurlers instead of the footballers, and you know, this year he's got his start in the league, and then in the last league game, their last game before championship, he gets withdrawn before half time. I'm sure, you know, there's any number of players that could have been withdrawn, you know, there was a lot of people disappointing. But you look at the half forward line, McCormack, Grant, he's the kind of the worker bee he was of that trio last season. And Michael Breen, who's a midfielder, effectively, he did get 2 points. And then O'Brien, who was withdrawn, you know, I know Callanan's missing and Bonner's coming back, but the forward line, it doesn't seem all of a sudden quite as, you know, such a difficult sextet to get into as it did, you know, even whatever, 6 months ago. Yeah. It's kind of weird.
No, I agree. And Paddy, I'd like to throw that to you, because McCormack was put in there for this work rate, and Tipperary still had real five lethal forwards, scoring forwards. That half forward line wouldn't strike fear into teams. Like, you know, the All-Ireland last year, Noel McGrath was out in the wing and Bonner Maher was centre-forward and Dan McCormack had his role there. You know, are Tipperary kind of going away from what... And like, okay, the context of Shamey being injured obviously has to be put on this, but they seem to have gone away from maybe the scoring forwards and maybe towards more working forwards. Would that be fair?
I wouldn't have said so, really, because you had three deadly enough hurlers in there yesterday. Dan McCormack, who's shown league as well, he'll take a few scores as well. Mikey Breen has taken scores, a lot of scores last year in championship. So I wouldn't go that. I'd say they were certainly conscious that they had a physical presence in the forward line.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, when you say Galway have it, but the reason Galway are going well is because they work together as a unit. Like, there wasn't too many balls caught clean yesterday. You know, so, okay, lads are over 6 foot. That's not really what it's all about either, though. It's about working together onto little breaks, the half, the split second that you're up in your man, that you're off the break of the ball, knowing that it's not going to be caught. The ball's about to be cleared, okay, I get into position. Tip didn't look to have that motivation yesterday. They didn't look, you know, whatever way it's spinning on foot, the intensity, the up for it, pumped up, whatever way you want to put it, Tip weren't in that zone yesterday. I think, personally, I think that's what a lot of it is down to. Certainly in hurling, when it's 50-50 ball, and when you get to this height of elite hurling, when you're not up to it, when you're not up for it, and you're against the team who are, then you're going to get blown away. And as JJ said, we could have been backed by a good bit more than we were. So I don't think there's huge, massive things to fix. Certainly a couple of technical things I would fix. But if you were to look at it yesterday, who won most breaking ball? Galway. Who broke out from defence more? Galway. Who got more ball into the full forward than Galway? And look, there was, as I said, a couple of positional changes, a couple of players come back in, that's fine, but on the whole, Tip were just, you know, they were not as up for it, and they might need this kick up the backside and that bit of stimulus to get them going. Like, I suppose 2010, Cork hammered the crap out of us blowing Parky Creeve, and that was that stimulus. So possibly, you know, this could be, you know, Tip could be in a better position now to kick up the backside than if they won maybe on a bad performance.
Yeah, I'm actually wondering about that, JJ. I'm starting to wonder, will it have caused Tipperary a bit of psychological damage? Because all the talk in the last year was they want to emulate Kilkenny. They targeted the league. They went public with saying, we want to win this league. The talk was that you can now trust Tipperary to, you know, the process, you know, almost like comparing with Dublin, and that the level of performance. And to be fair to them, they backed that up right throughout the league. But now this has thrown a doubt in my mind about Tipperary, as in they can be flat. You know what I mean? They're not maybe at that level where they're going to be this invincible team that, you know, when you were at your best, Galway wouldn't be hammering you in the league final if you know what I mean?
Then a few years ago, Dublin beat us in a league final there as well, and we were completely flat in the day too, you know.
Right.
So it can happen very, very easy. If one team turns up to play a league match and the other team turns up to play a championship match, the mentality is completely different for that day. Now, you could think you'd be going well the Tuesday, Thursday or Tuesday, Friday before the match, but on the morning it could be something that you might just sense it yourself, but you don't know until the game is over that you were flat or not, you know. So I don't think it's going to be psychologically affect Tipperary, to be honest with you. I think they're mature enough now and they know their own goals in their own head, what they're going to win, and they're looking to win the All-Ireland Championship. There's no doubt about that. If they go on to steamroll everyone during the summer, they'll forget about that league match very, very easily. But the only thing is that they're after getting kicking the backside now and kicking the arse, and then they have a month and a half, 2 months to rectify that before the Cork game. And it's if you want to get kicked in the hole, it's the best time of the year to get it, because you go back to your clubs, come back in, when you go back in training, you know you're going to work hard. And Michael Ryan won't have to say a word. He'll have to just show him the video then again. And each player knows, if you play bad on any given day, you don't need anyone to tell you. You've your own motivation now, and them guys will go back training their own, getting their touch right, getting their fitness right. Now maybe they weren't doing that, or maybe they could do it better again for the next month and a half. They will be doing that again, so I can't see psychology affecting Tipperary, to be honest. I think they're just too mature for that at the moment.
Yeah, what do you think, Paddy? What would the talk be like in Tipperary? Because to be fair, maybe in the 2 years ago, I think under Eamon O'Shea, they might have had a reputation for going, you know, the odd bad performance, but kind of thought that was gone out of them.
Yeah, well, I suppose go back to the quarter final against Clare in the league. It was the semi quarter final last year down in Ennis, and we weren't terrible, or we didn't lose by much, but it was an absolutely terrible performance. And if you ask supporters coming out of Celtic Park that day, well, are you going to win the All Ireland? I don't think there was too many that were confident, you know. So even in the league, I personally didn't think we were going fantastically in the last 2 to 3 league games. I thought the extra game, but for 2 lucky goals, the last 10 minutes. You know, how well did Tipperary play that day? So I think this, not that it's obviously been coming, but they haven't been as good as what has been Lahan in the media or Lahan with talk and maybe supporters and that. So, like, they would have had a reputation before, but look, it just serves them to say, right, we have to go back, we have to go to the basics. We're not a fantastic team, even though I know obviously some of the players, they're not going around thinking they're anything great or anything like that, but you know, a softness can come in. You might think you're going very well, and then all of a sudden you get the kick up the backside, and now you realise, right, let's get back to basics, let's do the little things, let's get a bit closer in training, let's get a bit tighter on each other, let's get a bit more physical and intense, and then, you know, get that little switch on so the championship is coming. So I don't think psychologically it's going to be a problem, but I think, you know, McRae won't have to say much. The lads know what's in front of him now.
Could you make, I know they're playing Cork in 4 weeks, and everyone said, right, you know, you better get the reality check now than then. But, you know, they've kind of been owning the Munster Championship the last few years, with the league not being a nice thing to win. And, you know, I find it kind of strange that you can just kind of, you know, kind of argue the way it's the league, the championship's coming. Like, you know, this is the tournament they've said they wanted to win, and they've been trying to win for 2 months. It seems a bit of a cop out to say, well, that was the league, it's better to get the kick up the arse now than the championship. What if you have another flat, unexplainable flat performance against Cork? You know, these things have to be examined. You can't just explain it away.
Yeah, well, that's what's in my head now, rather than thinking this is a foregone conclusion.
But they didn't go out to, they went out to win that game Sunday. There's no argument about that, definitely did, but whatever their preparation, when it comes to championship, your mind is completely 100% focused on it. For the week coming up to the 2 or 3 weeks coming up to it, you're actually just fixated on that championship game and getting yourself right for it. Now, that's not saying coming up to a league game, you'd have a couple of distractions. You mightn't be fully tuned in, but yeah, come championship, the whole thing just clicks into gear. You're in it in summer championship, you know, it's kind of knockout, you know, you're kind of, you're playing for your position there as well, like, you know. So look, they went to win that game, no doubt about it, but it was something that happened. Can you explain it? Probably not. Will you try and prevent it the next day? You definitely will, like.
Yeah, and it's the pressure of the whole week building up to it, how some players can handle that pressure and lead up to championship, other players can't, and they don't perform because they're not able to handle the whole package of championship.
It's more
really
than a game. A championship game is more. It's a weak build up to it as well.
Yeah, and even here, Joe Canning mentioned earlier that they didn't even target winning the league. You know what I mean? It wasn't anything that was huge on their radar. So they're just going into these games relaxed, you know. And maybe Tipperary, maybe we're banging on about too long through the league. We want to win this. We want to win this, and it was weird. But that, again, this is hindsight kind of arguments as well. Like, I mean, we didn't have E on the Thursday, but all of us tipped except for the wise Damien Hayes went for Galway.
The only witness to this is my father, but I was off last week. I was down in Wexford and he said it's foregone conclusion Tipperary are going to win. I said no, Galway are going to win, because they do this every now and again when nobody expects them to do it, they'll do it, and then they'll lose to Dublin in the Leinster semi final. So I'm putting that in there now as well.
I'm believing in Galway. I don't want to hear this. Right, up next we'll do performance of the weekend.
After the match with Marty Morrissey and the Marty squad, and you know, the big thing for me yesterday with Clare versus Galway was.
Hang on, did you ask permission to do the Marty squad there?
Well, I didn't, but I was only a special guest. Last Thursday, you asked me the same question when I started Bubbles, and I said it yesterday on the Marty squad. Says yes, I would have started Bubbles for that game yesterday. That was the first I heard of Johnny King coming back with the Galway squad. You know, I was asked just in the Marty squad.
Here, Damien, are you getting paid for Marty squad plugs on our show here?
That's three.
Wait, no, I do that completely voluntarily.
He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses! What a match!
Move away from the messing there, lads. Right, we have a serious show to do here. Right.
All right, performance of the weekend, lads. JJ, I'm going to go to you first. You get the easy pick.
Yeah, I spoke about him already there in podcast. I think David Bourke, his heartbeat, the Galway team. Phenomenal game again yesterday. He was just everywhere, the backs, forwards. He was just linking play and he was scoring as well. And I think he was absolutely phenomenal.
What do you know about David Bourke? You've played against David Bourke. What's he like? Is he a real competitor, I would imagine.
He is, yeah, but he's able to look after himself as well. Like, you know what I mean? He's very strong on the ball. He's very skillful right and left, and it's sort of guy, you know, you pay to go in and watch him hurl, because he's just the ability he has, the vision he has, and he can do it all. And the beauty of it is that he goes up and down that field, but he's a natural midfielder. He's not a manufactured midfielder. He's just a hurler there, and I don't think he probably can't hurl anywhere else, just bar midfield, whereas a lot of people will be either a back or a forward and a converted midfielder, but he's just your ultimate midfielder.
Yeah, so the idea that you'd play him in the forwards, like, that was trial during the league, but that's...
I wouldn't regularly play him in the forwards. For a surprise element, you could put him in forward, because a few years ago, I think it was 2012, I was marking him, he came in full forward and I wasn't expecting him in there or something like that.
Right.
You could throw in the mix, you know what I mean, but as your for the championship going forward, I'd say he'd be playing midfielder more than he'd be playing.
Here's a good question for you, because you've had enough battles with Galway. Do you believe in this Galway team?
It's funny, because if Kilkenny played Galway in the morning, I'd back Kilkenny to win.
Yeah.
If Tipperary played Kilkenny, you'd lean towards Tipperary, and if Galway played Tipperary, you'd lean towards Galway. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's a funny dynamic with the three different teams at the moment.
Yeah, because that's just proof that a lot of the game is psychological. There's no doubt. Or, like, I mean, styles win fights. So we'll go with another boxing analogy there, Paddy. Go on, who'd you go with, Paddy?
I just went with Conor Whelan, just as a corner forward, very hard to win that amount of ball and put it over. And he's very, very strong. He's on a good player, so Conor Whelan's very good.
There was one score he got, and remember, like, did I criticise him, or did I just question, is he in the top bracket? But he got a point. He got a ball underneath the terrace, and he was in a standing position. And he fainted one way, came back the other way, and off his left hand side scored like a that's top bracket stuff. Now I honestly didn't think he was capable of that. I thought he'd missed kind of easy enough chances, but if you throw scoring onto the torment he must be to mark, then you've got a real top level player, Paddy.
Yeah, he's a nightmare, because you'd see him in a match and he's running over and back. I saw him in a challenge match a couple of years ago, and it's like he was a long distance runner. All he did was run from sideline to sideline, and I don't care what, how far the cornerback you are, that's fair tiring. And then when the ball actually does come in to have the bust to get off the mark before him, you know, so he really puts under pressure. Now, as you said, I didn't know he had that in his locker that he could hit one from the sideline over from the 21, but geez, he was on fire yesterday.
Yeah, he definitely was, and it's the tackling that he brings to the game. It's like, I mean, you saw 2 points he got against Limerick were straight from his own doing. Like, he's actually robbing fellas coming out with the ball, just coming behind him, taking the ball off him.
The man never gives up. He'll follow you to the top of the stand to get the ball off.
That's infectious, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Brilliant.
I saw him turn over one player underneath the stand, and Joe Canning even went pumped. And you don't often see Joe doing that, but Whelan got that into Joe, you know? Like, I mean,
so as a back, when you're looking up the field and you see their forwards working that hard, it just makes your job a lot easier as well, because you know they're not going to be from that corner. It's not going to be huge when the ball comes out of that
particular
corner.
Clever about it as well. He's not just running in bullheaded into everything. Like, he's a really good tackler. He knows exactly how to do it. His timing is top class. And he's not just knocking the ball away, he's winning it, as you said. He's actually taking it directly off the man. And he could probably play cornerback, because he's going to play corner forward.
He's picking their pocket. It's brilliant to see. And look how easy it is. And he just gets himself lovely little scores. Mikey, who are you going for?
I'm all about the headlines, so I'm going to go for Jason Flynn. Just the 2 goals he got, absolutely lovely. You could make the argument that Gleeson maybe should have saved one of them, but it's just his technique when he got through on goal. He throws the ball out in front of himself and he shortens the grip, and it must be impossible to hook.
Yeah,
absolutely impossible.
He has a languid kind of style. Like, he's just such a beautiful player. And I even remember in the All-Ireland final, he played wing forward. It was in the 2 years ago, the All-Ireland final. Remember that point he got straight from the puck out? He just took it on his hurl and all in one motion. Put it, like, this lad's a genius of a hurler, but there's a bit of an inconsistency maybe to him. And that, if you could get that into his game, like, he is lethal.
Yeah, he's very quick. And again, another, you know, I don't know, put Mink Conner forward as well. And he was unlucky in the first half. He broke through again around Mikey Cahill, and Darren Gleeson made a good save that particular time, you know. So he's confident. And the second goal, he had confidence to take on James Barry as well. He could have took the easy pint
easily.
He broke in and he said, right, the pint was there for taking, but he had the confidence to go back and go after James Barry. And you like to see him scoring the goal after doing that, because he backed himself to score it, you know.
Yeah, and did that old banging the slitter off the ground to earn himself 4 more steps. I love seeing that. Like, that's real crowd pleaser stuff. It's great to see. I'm going to go for Joe Canning, lads, purely just for his all round game and those sideline balls. Like, I mean, picking out Burke from a sideline ball like a moving target, and he's hitting them, and I'm wondering, why isn't everyone doing this? They're not doing it because it's bloody impossible.
People go on about Austin Gleeson and he's amazing for like the long distance points from a sideline cut. There is nobody, as far as I can see in the history of hurling, who can hit a sideline cut like Joe Canning, because he can do anything with the ball once it's on the ground in front of him. It's incredible to watch.
McInerney there deserves a shout out as well. He was outstanding. And when you talk about importance to teams, like Galway, like you said, getting that centre half back and full back sorted out, and he's Jerry McInerney's son, the great Jerry McInerney of the white boots, mullet and moustache fame. So if everybody will have a soft spot for his son anyways, because he was a brilliant hurler. But I'm telling you, just little things like that, you know, even a bit of tradition and a bit of pedigree these lads have, maybe it might help. Out of the 4 nominations, because I am the casting vote, I'm self-appointed casting vote person, I'm going to go for Conor Whelan, because he's a ball of energy, he's infectious, he now might be able to score like top-notch players, and basically he's listened to this podcast and he's got that bit of inspiration that he's needed. He was questioned by the media. He'll talk about this in September when the All-Ireland's over. Well, that's all that I needed. And Joe Canning listens to the podcast as well, lads. So just so that you remember that, and you be careful about what you say about Joe Canning. That's all we've time for. Oh, we'll continue on with a Monday show from now on. We're going to give, like the football pundits, we're giving all the lads a few weeks off to recharge their batteries for the championship.
Brilliant.
And we're going to, me and you, Mikey, are going to cover the me and you are going to cover the round robin in Leinster.
Ah, fantastic.
Yeah. No, well, I don't want to actually jeer that, because Meath had a brilliant win yesterday and we just don't have time to cover a league final fully, do an interview with Joe Canning and try and cover those games as well. So we'll do plenty on Kerry, Meath, Laois and Westmeath on next Monday's show, and give the preliminary round robin competition the focus and exposure that it deserves. Right, and we'll talk to you next Monday. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, like, I'm heartbroken.